All right, nice to have you back with us as we've got baseball coming up. Urias and DeSclafani, two excellent pitchers this year. We welcome in Bruce Jenkins on this Sunday morning. Bruce, good morning.
Morning, Marty. How are you?
Very good, very good. There's just something about Giants-Dodgers, and I joked with Woe. I read some quote somewhere about Willie McCovey saying, as you came off the plane, you could see the electricity.
It's crackling right in front of you there. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I'll tell you, I don't care who pitches. I don't care what's going on. There's just every inning, there's just something going on.
Well, I'm watching yesterday, and there's Kazmir out there pitching to Pujols. I mean, who could see that coming, you know, just 2 weeks ago, or let alone spring training? I mean, just great, you know. And then, you know, both of these guys are – there's like apparently at the tail end of they have anything left. So, you know, Kazmir pitched great, and Pujols seems to do something nice every day for the Dodgers. And yet another addition to this rivalry. It's so fun, and that is a good matchup today. I'm a big fan of Urias. I thought he didn't get nearly enough credit for really saving the Dodgers during the World Series. He was so clutch and so good, and there were so many, you know, more crackling electric storylines going on, and he's just out there mowing people down. So, good one, good matchup.
Yeah, and DeSclafani on the other side, you know, if you look at the whip, the runners put on base per inning, for Urias, it's 0.85.
Man, anything below one, you know?
Yeah, come on, anything below one, you're talking, you know, Hershiser at his best or a Marischal.
Yeah, it's like nobody's getting on.
No, DeSclafani is 0.92.
Wow, that's really impressive.
So
he's a good one.
Batting average against DeSclafani, 186, and Urias, 201.
Yeah, I look for a 10-9 final.
Yeah, really? So that's my point. This stuff is crazy. I'll tell you one thing about Pujols. So he's wearing Longoria out. I mean, he's, you know, if he hits another ground ball to third, he'll break the major league record. But when they jammed him, he got a hit and drove in a run. And Bruce, you think he won the World Series. I mean, the guy just was so happy that he ended up giving a kid his bat who sat next to the dugout. Did you see that?
Yeah, I mean, he's just there's so much goodwill just oozing from that guy. And it's really always been the case. And things were really getting sour in Anaheim for him and for a number of reasons. But it really was time for him to get a change of scene. And, you know, what a dream to go to the Dodgers. They welcome him. They're finding a spot for him every day, even with all that talent. And he's fitting in really, really well. So it makes them all the more scary.
Yeah, he's very happy. He is very. I've never seen the guy happier. Really,
that's great.
And if he ever hits a home run, forget it. They'll have to go out and carry him around the bases. Really,
hit one, didn't he? To right
field?
He
did. Yeah, he did. He got one already, and then he got the RBI yesterday, and he just was because he's hit into so many double plays, and he got a ball that he could muscle out there, and it was a big. It turned out to be an important RBI. So. It's an interesting part of this this whole thing. And how about Max Muncy, you know?
Oh, man.
He hit another one in the ocean.
He got a changeup, and it looked awful good to him. It was probably the one mistake that Kazmir really made, but way into the ocean. He's got a couple of those now. He's got more than the number of guys that have played for the Giants over the years. I really like Muncy. You know, he's been around for sure, but ever since he joined the Dodgers, he's just been a stud. You know, just consistent. You know, he's been big with Bellinger and Seager out. He's been really big for them. And you know, obviously he stands in there good against the lefty pitcher, and he fields his position and plays with enthusiasm, and good one. He's a good one.
This is a good day for Longoria, we hope. In May, he's 13 for 67. He's hit lefties really well, although 2 for 13 in his last 13 at-bats. But, Bruce, they got to get something from Longoria. He really has slowed down. And Belt is, you know, look, they threw the fastball past him yesterday until he bunted with two strikes. How about that? So the older guys, you know, Crawford and Posey, you can't put that pressure on them every day. Longoria's got to help out a little bit.
Yeah, and I heard that stat on Belt during the telecast that he was 1 for 21 on elevated fastballs, and then they blew another one by him. That's a little bit alarming. That's something that can't be on your reputation in the big leagues or anywhere, really, if you can't hit the good fastball up. And, you know, his wheelhouse is down lower. We know that. But if they're going to keep getting him out on that pitch, it's going to be a problem. But I'm not worried about Longoria at all, not in the slightest. He's way too good of a professional. He's been kind of semi-written off, you know, in his days here before, and he comes back with a bunch of nice plays. And he's a good hitter. He's just He's going to produce. And, you know, meanwhile, Posey's been one of the standouts in the first game against Bauer with the shadows and nobody could see the ball. He took an good outside pitch over the fence in right field. And then last night he just jacks a dead pull homer. So he's been really fun to watch. And you know, Crawford's been really maybe the best story of all.
Yeah, good stuff. Very good stuff. Well, a couple of things that happened around the game that we can touch on. One, remember Rennie Stennett? Bruce?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
He became a free agent, one of the Giants' first free agents. I think it was 5 years, $2 or $3 million.
Yeah, it was a lot of money at the time, yeah.
Yeah, and he was coming off an injury, and he only played 2 years here, and then they ate the rest of the contract. But he passed away this week, but he had 7 hits in a game, and Crawford tied that. So I thought it's worth a mention of Rennie Stennett.
Oh, yeah. Boy, what a good hitter coming up for the Pirates. He grew up in Panama in the same neighborhood as Rod Carew, actually. They actually went to the same high school. Manny Sanguin was there. He was a pitcher thrown to Sanguin for a while in his youth and comes up with the Pirates immediately just raking. And it was kind of a shame because early on in his career in 71, they get to the playoffs and they beat the Giants with Bob Robertson laying waste to the Giants pitching staff. But they left him off that roster to make room for Jose Pagan, who had been hurt, but he's coming back to back up Dave Cash, who was a regular second baseman. So it was too bad Stennett didn't make that roster because he was definitely a tremendous hitter. And then in the 79 World Series, they get back and he only got one at bat. So that was a shame. But, you know, everybody who saw Stennett with the Pirates, really a typical Pirate of those days, you know, Al Oliver and Richie Hebner and Stargell. He's just one tremendous hitter after another.
Oh, 7 hits in a 9-inning game.
Seven for seven. Yeah, in a 9-inning game. Yeah.
How about that? In a 9-inning, Crawford did it in extra innings, and then Andy Bagley brought Stennett and Crawford together. It was really nice.
Absolutely. Very nice.
Very sweet. But, so that was Rennie Stennett. He was part of the 9 players. The Pirates did this in the early 70s, remember?
Uh-huh.
They put the all-Latin and African-American starting 9 out there, and he was one of them. It's the first time that had ever happened in Major League Baseball, at least in this part of baseball.
Yeah, I think they asked Danny Murtaugh about it. He goes, "What do you mean?" He's not like he was trying to do it. These are the guys I want out there, you know?
Yeah, so that was Rennie Stennett.
Yeah.
The other thing is Jason Stark had a spot on Thursday about the new rules in the lower minor leagues that encourage stealing, and he says everything's turning into a track meet. You like it?
Well, yeah, it's tough. I mean, I love stealing, you know, that base stealing would be coming back in any form. But, I mean, the fact is the way the game has always been played, there have been eras, whether it was Ty Cobb or Max Carey or Lou Brock or Maury Wills, where Ricky Henderson, where the stolen base was a thing. Vince Coleman, you know, you don't have to make it artificial. It'll happen without having to jack up the rules. If I'm a pitcher, and the rule in the lower A ball now is that you've only got 2 pickoff moves, you know, and you guys are taking enormous leads, and like you say, it's turned into a track meet. I don't know. I mean, that to me, that's a little rough to me. I mean, you can still throw over there a third time, but the runner has to be out. You have to pick him off, otherwise it's a balk. So I mean, this is something going through a pitcher's head. I don't know that he needs to be dealing with, especially if you're, you know, good at the pickoff move and, you know, made an art of it. But, you know, speaking of art, there's an art to the stolen base, too. I mean, not everybody can do it. Not even some of the fastest guys in the world. You know, they still got to figure out, you know, the situation, the pitcher, the catcher, and everything else. And to make it too easy, like when Pablo Sandoval is going to steal 38 bases, I don't know.
I'm with you. No, I'm with you on this. I think the great base stealers still will steal bases.
Yeah.
And you don't need, you know, Sandoval or Longoria having, you know, 40 stolen bases. You know, you don't need that. All right. No, I think we agree. We agree on that. So that's a rule that I think they're going wild with, but I don't think.
I don't think that's coming in. No. And that's all the way down in low A, so that's not even in the Atlantic League, you know?
No. We had Steve Tretter on yesterday, who wrote the fabulous book about Horace Stoneham and Stoneham's father and the 40 years of Horace Stoneham owning the Giants. Bruce, Horace Stoneham deserves a very special place, I think, in Giants history. I just want to touch on it briefly. We've got more with that interview next week. But Horace Stoneham did a lot of amazing things. He seems to be known for candlestick and drinking a lot. But
He's big at Tootsie Yours.
Yeah, that was his buddy in New York. But he did amazing things to revolutionize the social part of baseball, the organization, and he loved the Giants.
Yeah, his dad owned the Giants, which is great. And when Charles Stoneham died, Horace was only 32, and he takes over the team. But he absolutely did. You know, Walter O'Malley was really the driving force, I guess, between the two teams coming out here. But Horace Stoneham had an eye on the West Coast way before that. During the war, the Pacific Coast League had this idea where let's come up with a third league, and it's all West Coast. And all the owners scoffed at it, I read, except for Horace. He goes, you know, there's a lot of potential out there. We got to think about this. So he was quick to get out of New York at a time when he really had to do it. You know, the Polo Grounds was falling apart. Their attendance was terrible. And so he gets the team out here. But, you know, after Jackie Robinson came in and integrated the game, Horace was the second National League team to bring in blacks. They brought in Hank Thompson and Monty Irvin. And this was no small thing at the time. It's not like everybody fell in line after Jackie at all. You know, it was still a very bold move to do. And it was just a precursor to Horace. I mean, my God, when the Giants came out here, the team was just full of great black and Latin players. It was astounding, really, how many they had, and just one great name after another. And so that's a real big part of his legacy, too. So he should be fondly remembered, I think, in the big picture.
Yeah, and he opened up the Caribbean scouting. He had this Pompez. From the New York Black Cubans, and he hired him for the Giants. He was the first African-American Latin player or a former scout to be part of an organization, and that brought in Alou and Ossie Virgil and Marichal and the rest of them, and Horace started that. He was
big outreach into the Latin American community. It was no accident that those things happened.
No, he started that, and then, you know, and he and his father really created the rivalry with the Dodgers, and you know that was it. And when the Horace hired Leo DeRocher, come on, the Dodger manager.
And everybody's going, what the hell, right? Next thing you know, Bobby Thompson, and they get into the 1954 World Series. So that worked out pretty well.
Yeah, and we've never forgotten it. So he, you know, we can talk about this some more another time, but there's so much about him. And, of course, he ends up, you know, bringing the team out here, as you point out. And the last thing he did was he opened up the avenue for a Japanese player to come to play in the big leagues.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, very first one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very, very much so. I can't help but remember one of the things that didn't work out, that when the Giants opened their spring training in Casa Grande, which was supposed to turn into this amazing real estate development, the tourists are going to be there, and it was just like, you know, the tumble and tumbleweeds and a couple prairie dogs.
Now, this sounds like it was a Lou Wolf extravaganza.
I went out there once and spent about a week there. It was really fun, but I'm thinking, man, this is a little bit out of the way. I don't know if this is going to turn into a bonanza, you know?
No, well, it should have been bonanza. That would have been better with Little Joe or something.
Yeah, but, here comes Haas at third base.
Well, he was ahead of his time. You know, this is what they all want to do today.
You're right, exactly, yeah.
You know, put the ballpark in the hotel. So I'm glad that we could touch on it. Bill, your thoughts about Horace Stoneham, and did you know anything about him?
No, I got to know him, but I'm so glad I didn't have to go to Casa Grande. I just heard horror stories of that place from all the different players. Yeah, I got to go to Scottsdale, but still Scottsdale at that time, the ballpark was so old and old wooden bleachers and things of that magnitude. It was still a great place to play. They've, of course, renovated it in one of the beautiful spring training sites. But I want to touch both of you guys today. I had Scott Kazmir on a post-game show. He jumped on with me after he did his Zoom interview. And one of the things he said to me was, when I started warming up, Bill, I was so anxious, I was so nervous, I was so scared. It was like my first day in the big leagues. He said, I talked to Bailey, the pitching coach, and he says, I don't need 20 minutes. I need about 10 minutes. He was so anxious. And then finally he said, once he got Taylor out, he kind of calmed down. But this is the point I want you both to listen. He said after he gave up the home run to Muncy, he felt like he was back in the big leagues. He felt that he had more stuff now. He dialed in. He got like next nine guys out. But he said it knocked him back into a sense of when he was pitching in the big leagues. So your thoughts on both of these things?
Yeah, you know, it's such a hard game to play, Bill, and it was a dream for him to come out there and just come out firing and you know, get a guy out, and it's just not going to be like that, you know, and you need a little jolt, and you know, the great thing is he responded beautifully, but it sort of brought him back to, hey, I just made a mistake. There's balls in the water now. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just a double up the alley, you know. He got completely hammered, and it brought him back. But the great thing is he wasn't rattled a little bit at all by it. Like you say, it settled him down, and he just kept throwing bullets up there. And geez, I don't know what's next for him, but they certainly wouldn't offend anybody with another start.
No, I think depending on Logan Webb, as Woe said, depending on his shoulder, Kazmir could get another start next week or even a spot in the bullpen. Why send him back? I mean, you create a spot for him, and he pitched great. Yeah, Bill, to answer that question, I think it's a question of adrenaline. Mm-hmm. And I can think of two things. One, when I was a criminal lawyer, if I hadn't been in court for a week, I ended up going to court. And as soon as the DA said something, I was, wow. I'm ready to fight, you know, and it just took that, and all of a sudden I was ready to go. And doing this job, you know, once we connect in with Raf and get all the equipment going, and that first Raf says go, and I got to, you know, open it up and, you know, start the show and come up with things to say, that adrenaline kicks in. So I think for him, I think that's the best part, is that you're back, and the adrenaline kicks in, and I thought he did a great job.
Yeah, he really did, and he just said he felt so comfortable throwing to Buster Posey. He never shook him off once. His fastball was 93-94, which I thought was good. He
That's
elevated
amazing,
well.
Really. Yeah.
And he said, I wish I had a little better breaking ball, but he says he went to more changeups and cutters. And we kind of went right through each inning, and he was just telling me everything he was throwing. It was really a fun interview. I was so glad to get him on after the game. He was still jazzed. He was still excited.
It's just great, isn't it? Yeah.
It was. And I asked him, because I did an interview with him after spring training, and I asked him, why are you continuing to pitch? He says, well, I have two young boys. I have two young boys under 5 years old, and I want them to see me in the big league. So I asked him, did your kids get to go to the game? He goes, no, they were in Texas. But he was so happy it was on Fox Sports, so they got to see him on television. And he said, that kind of made it more energized for them, because he's watching their dad on TV.
Oh my God.
It was cool. It's just a cool story. I really do. And I hope he stays up. He might be that long man, Marty, that they don't have in the bullpen.
Well, you create a spot for him on the 40-man, and he's on the 25. And if he's doing successfully, why not? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I'll tell you something. I'm glad we brought this up. Middle relief is so important.
Yeah,
and we saw it yesterday. The Dodgers got into the Giants' middle relief. Now, that was going to happen anyway because it was a bullpen game. But the middle relief, Tropiano got whacked around, even though the error hurt him. And then Alvarez had nothing. And before you knew it, the game was out of hand. And this is what the Giants do to other teams, is get into that middle relief. And I saw the A's do it for years with Art Howe and Maka. They did it constantly. Get in middle relief, get the pitcher out. I'll never forget it. And that's how you win games. So for him, I agree with you. If he can be that middle reliever and give you two or three quality innings in the middle, I think it's huge for the Giants.
Yeah, I don't see his stuff like going away all of a sudden. I mean, he's been out of the game for a long time. His arm's feeling great, and you know, he's a pro. He's really been around, and he's had a lot of success. So yeah, he's got the good head out there. I'd much rather see him out there than Alvarez and a lot of guys that they've put in that role. So that could be what's next for him. If you know, it'd be great if Webb can come back and get in the rotation, and that's the ideal. But don't let Kazmir get away.
No, they can close out a lead. You know, between Littell and Barragar and Rogers and McGee. You give them a lead in the seventh inning, they can bring it home.
Yeah, and they're getting leads. Not against the Dodgers, but
no,
for
but
the
it's
most
holding
part, yeah.
It. Yeah, it's holding it when you don't have the lead, and that's where this comes in. I'll ask both you guys, we didn't have a no-hitter yesterday. Were you disappointed?
I was crushed. I couldn't even talk for a while. My wife going, what's wrong, hon?
What about it?
Yeah, well, I think we're probably due for a couple today, if not two or three. I mean, let's see who's on the ledger. Who's going to get the one today? Could be Casey Mize. Could be
how about Darvish?
Is he going today?
Yeah, against Seattle. So Seattle's a threat to be no hit every game.
Yeah, they're reeling. They're completely reeling. There's a couple of good options right there. Of course, Cody Poteet could weigh in, too, so you never know with a no-hitter.
He's been terrific, whoever he is. We have no idea who he is.
I don't know who he is, but he could sure throw a no-no.
We got that cooking. Well, I have coming up an interview with Alan Levy, who wrote a book, and I thought it would be good to have it on, the biography of Walter Alston.
What
I thought about it, Bruce and Bill, and is Walter Alston managed 23 years with one-year contracts, of course. But while the Giants had Alvin Dark and Bill Rigney and Charlie Fox and Clyde King and Tom Sheehan, Walter Alston was there through everything. Just Walter Alston. And he never sunk into the level of Leo DeRocher or the crazy Giant-Dodger rivalry. But he was a very quiet man, but one-year contract. So I thought, in contrast to what the Giants had in all those years, I thought it'd be interesting to hear about who Walter Alston really was. Bruce, your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, I was a Dodger fan during the great days, the late 50s and 60s, when they came out west, and we never knew anything about him. Not one thing did we know, except that he was a good manager and he made good moves, and his interviews were kind of dull. And I'm reading a book by Tom Callahan called Gods That Play, and he gets into Walter Alston. I forget the connection. But and what an interesting guy he was off the field, with a great sense of humor and had other things that he liked to do. So I'm sure that interview is going to reveal him in a much greater detail. But just a classy guy who went about his business and sort of kept his private life to himself. But meanwhile, if you got to know him, he was even more interesting than before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, went from Brooklyn to L.A. and never stopped being a guy from Dartown, Ohio.
Exactly.
You know, I tell you what, gentlemen, it's so different how managers from then to how they are now, how it's changed. The roles of managers have changed. From Walter Alston, we go to Bruce Bochy with the big contracts, the $4 or $5 million a year contracts, multi-year contracts, to now when you have analytics telling the manager what to do in the dugout, iPads, we talked about it yesterday. The manager's job has definitely changed from years back when Walter Alston was there to now. And you guys tell me your thoughts on that.
Yeah,
well, it's a great, great big collective now. I mean, the Giants are a great, great example with the many coaches they have and all the input they're getting. the pile of analytics data on its own is completely new. And around the bigs, the bench. Sometimes the bench coach is the most influential guy, and you really can't always pinpoint who's making the calls here. Or what went into a move when before was just managers would make a move based on something that you saw as well as he did as the game went on, and that was your evidence. Whatever happened before is right in front of you, but now the pile of evidence and details on guys with their tendencies is so vast, and at the manager's disposal, as he looks down into his iPad or whatever, it's a totally different game. I'm not terribly fond of it, but on the other hand, it's it can be refreshing if you've got a manager who's just overmatched and has lost the clubhouse and is just on a tailspin and you can't get out of until you replace him. You know, we've seen that hundreds of times over the years, and so it's different. It's much more complicated than before, but it's interesting in its way.
Well, the manager used to be in charge of the clubhouse. He would, he would take care of the clubhouse, the food in the clubhouse, and the manager was the manager of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then it sort of got away from that to some degree, and then the manager really was a buddy of the general manager or the owner.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you mm-hmm. got the job. So if you could sit down and drink, I mean, the Stoneham is a great example of it, Tom Sheehan became the manager of the Giants because he used to sit around with Stoneham and have a drink every once in a while. So
couldn't manage a lick, but man, could he mix a martini?
They didn't even have a uniform for him. He was so big that it took him 4 days to find a uniform for Tom Sheehan when Bill Rigney was fired in 1960.
Yeah.
So the manager's job, I think Bruce nailed it. Really has changed. Where now it involves so many other people. Where before mm-hmm. it was. And, Bill, you saw Frank Robinson. Who did he hang out with? Tom Haller and Bob Lurie, right?
Don Buford and some of the other coaches. He had that coaching staff circled around him. But it wasn't Tom Haller because those guys definitely went head-to-head a lot. But I really believe Bob Lurie
right.
was the one that really wanted him. And, of course, had a couple articles about Bob about that. John Shea wrote about it. And he was just saying that Bob Lurie took a chance, and he took the opportunity to do him, even though he was a African-American. He felt that was the best move he could have made, and sure enough, it did. But going back to Tom Haller and Frank, there was no love lost between those two guys.
Yeah. Not drinking buddies, let's say
not
sure.
At all.
No, Charlie Fox was part of Horace's crowd and brought Alvin Dark back. Horace demanded loyalty, and mm-hmm. he was a very loyal person. And if he brought Mel Ott in and kept him forever until the Dodger-Giant rivalry became so heated that he had to do something, and that's when he grabbed Leo Durocher from the Dodgers. I lived in Brooklyn, and Leo Durocher was a Giant manager. I think I was 25 years old when I learned that he actually managed the Dodgers. I was shocked. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. So that's we like to say that's baseball on a Sunday morning. Well, great to talk to you, Bruce.
Oh, absolutely. Always, you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks, right. Bruce. Have a good
All
morning.
Right.
Okay.
All right.
Take care.
Okay. Boy, Bill, that's a conversation.
It sure is. And it's true, though, Marty. Managers back then to now has totally changed, and as well as salaries. Their salaries aren't even close to where they were even 5 years ago. So I think the generation of more coaches and more information is definitely the suitable way to say that's what a manager is supposed to do now.
Mm, boy, a different game. And I was listening to you guys. It's 27 outs.
Yep.
The last three outs are the toughest to get. And, boy, get a lead to the seventh inning, and then let's see what's going to happen. It's still that kind of game. Still that kind of game.
Yeah, and it's just today's a big game for the Giants. There's no doubt about it. And it's not a life or death or anything like that, but you don't want to be swept three games by the Dodgers. If you can win one and then go back on the road, two in Arizona, four in L.A., then you're right back into a good winning way, a good mindset. And tomorrow's a day off, a good refresher for the Giants.
Well, you got to beat these pitchers, and you're going to see them again next week. So it'd be nice to knock Urias around a little bit and give you a little more confidence because you're going to see these guys next week. But it's still May 23rd. Mm-hmm. They're 10 over 500. They've got a nice gap between the rest of the league and the Giants. And it's been a good start. All right, well, we'll take a break. Alan Levy will join us. We'll talk about Walter Alston and the book he wrote. Then Bill, Kerry, and I are going to talk, and Kerry's got a guest coming up, and we've got Marcus Britone coming on from the Sacramento Bee, Adam Copeland, then we've got baseball, and boy, we got a whole morning for you right here on the Sports Leader.